The Building Greater Exeter podcast from Radio X. Focus on East Devon.
Hello and welcome to the first Building Greater Exeter podcast. My name is Jonathan Forster. I'm a designer and educator, and I'm delighted to be hosting this inaugural edition where we'll be focusing on East Devon. In this episode, we're going to be finding out about Building Greater Exeter's role and how it is working to support the built environment industry, speaking to experts involved in the development of the East Devon area, and finding out how you can get involved in the development and prosperity of the region. Building Greater Exeter is an organisation that is working across Exeter, East Devon and Tinbridge areas with a mission to support the built environment industry by inspiring new candidates, supporting employers and promoting a culture that makes the built environment a great industry to work in. The built environment refers to our surroundings in which people live, work and play, which includes anything built across our urban and rural spaces, buildings, parks, landscapes, waterways, utilities and transportation links. It is supported by a whole industry of businesses and a huge number of employees across our region. Anyone living in the area will have noticed the amount of building going on, and in addition to the obvious construction sector skilled trades, there are a whole range of industries and jobs involved, from civil engineering, architectural, interior and landscape design, accounting, business, legal and marketing services, environmental science, renewable energy and sustainable construction, mental health and well-being, plus future skills such as data science, digital solutions, robotics and automation. Building Greater Exeter is promoting the value of the built environment industry and forging links between employers and potential employees by providing employability and skills tools in one place and highlighting the huge amount of opportunities to develop a career across a wide variety of inclusive workplaces and employers. Today our focus is on the built environment across East Devon. I'm joined by experts in their field. Andy Wood, Assistant Director of Growth, Development and Prosperity at East Devon District Council. Naomi Harnett, Programme Manager, Exeter and East Devon Enterprise Zone, and Sally Basker, CEO of Exeter Science Park. Welcome to the Building Greater Exeter podcast. Just going to go around the table, and can you give a brief introduction to yourselves and your role? We'll start with Andy. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the importance and relevance of the built environment and the Building Greater Exeter initiative to what you are trying to achieve. Andy.
Yes, hello. So my name's Andy Wood. As you say, I'm head up the Growth, Development and Prosperity Service at East Devon. What does that mean? Well, that means we look after the economic development of the district. So we're trying to make sure everyone has the ability to access a decent, well-paid job. But we're also mindful in terms of the interplay, if you like, between the built and the natural environment, how we manage growth going forward, how we make sure that growth sits within our beautiful environment. And we also have people within the team who manage wildlife wardens, for example, who manage the pressure that sometimes is placed onto the natural environment, like the River Exe and the Pepperhead Heath, for example, as well. So we have quite a broad range of activities that are performed within the team. In terms of the question, in terms of, you know, what does it mean for kind of East Devon going forward? Well, I suppose my starting point would be the Southwest region. We are the only region that has above average house prices but below average wages. That creates huge problems, I think, for residents in terms of accessing housing market, for example. And we've seen, I think, pretty good progress in some respects, particularly in terms of wages. So East Devon wages have, on average, historically been below the regional average. We're now moving back towards that kind of regional average, but we've still got a big problem, what's called our house price to waste, to wages ratio. So that's still at 10 to 1. That's huge for people who are, you know, coming out of school, coming out of university, trying to get on the housing market. So a real challenge about how we deliver the right types of housing, how we ensure high quality, well remunerated employment. And also the other aspects that go with that, all the transport, the infrastructure, the schools, the dentists and everything else. That's really, from my perspective, the heart of our role.
What unique challenges does the area face in the light of the growth?
So probably our biggest challenge is that we have, our starting point is a really high quality natural environment. So East Devon effectively goes from the River Exe to the River Axe. And within that, you have two-thirds of the district being subject to areas of outstanding natural beauty designation. You have a World Heritage coastline. You have internationally recognised habitats like the Pepperhead Heaths, like the Exe Estuary. And yet, you know, the most recent results of the census, the 2021 census, reveal that in population terms, we're growing at more than twice the national average. Our population now is just over 150,000 people. And we're one of the second fastest growing district in the Southwest region. And that brings tensions. And those are the things that we need to manage. How do we manage if you like, an increase in the built environment. We need to deliver over 900 homes per year. We need to ensure we're delivering new workspace across a wide range of different sectors, from distribution right up to research and development. And we need to ensure that people have all the facilities, the services that need to go with that as well. And yet we need to make sure that we're also getting traction on some of those big societal challenges, addressing climate change, getting to net zero. And that is a really complicated, complex mix of different issues. Sometimes they, you know, struggle to align those, but that is our task fundamentally, because we need to make sure that local residents are benefiting from growth, and that the benefits of that growth, skills and everything else, education that goes with it, is all aligned, if that makes sense.
So you've got quite a contrast between, you know, the urban areas and then the beautiful landscape, but also there's a demographic shift, isn't there, with younger populations in certain areas and then more established, older populations. How are you managing the balance between those different factors?
Yeah, it's a huge contrast. Probably one of the sharpest in the country. So we have a new town, Cranbrook, that started development just over 10 years ago now. Population of, you know, about 8,000 people, 3,000 homes now built and occupied. But the average age, the average is 30. You go to Sidmouth, and the average age is probably pushing 65, so more than double. So just in kind of contrast terms, there is about 3% of the population of Cranbrook is over 65. For Sidmouth, I think it is over 35%. So, and that's within 10 miles of each other. So not only are we seeing a large population growth, we're also seeing a big change in the demographic structure of the district. We've got very established communities, particularly on the coastal area, that are very popular retirement destinations fundamentally, but then we've got a new town that serves a very different structure, of very different demographic, if you like, that's particularly attractive to young couples and to young families as well.
So Cranbrook, it's been developing and continues to develop, and we've understand that there's a new town planned. It's been under consultation. Hasn't been built yet, but it's on its way. But what lessons can we learn from the Cranbrook development, and how will East Devon District Council approach the development of the new town in a different way?
Yeah, it's a big challenge. So the genesis of for Cranbrook, the concept, traces back into the 1990s. Development didn't actually start until 2011. And I say now we see kind of circa 3,000 homes built and occupied. There's been a huge variety of challenges in there. If you think back to the 1990s, no one was thinking of internet shopping. Cranbrook was originally planned, the original master plan was planned with a very big, extensive high street. And I think everyone can see if they walk down the local high street now that the trends that have affected those kind of macro trends that have affected retail, and we simply don't need that level of retail space anymore. That's not how a 21st century town centre is going to function. So it's trying to maintain that agility, that flexibility as we move forward to be able to adapt to those trends, trying to work with local residents to understand their needs and how we can meet those needs. And there's some difficult aspects to that, not least in terms of, you know, the public sector budgets declining as well. But how do we kind of make sure that there's that kind of ability to adapt and to flex? How do we have meanwhile uses? We've seen really interesting uses of things like shipping containers that provide that agility in other places. Can we incorporate those types of things going forward? And how do we then roll some of the learning points? There's been some really good learning points from Cranbrook, the importance of schools, which were delivered really early. They played a huge role in the community in terms of going from scratch to a cohesive, fully functioning community. The schools have really been at the heart of that. How do we make sure that good practice continues going forward, so we continue to make sure that the schools are delivered as early as possible so people can send their kids just down the road? But also, how do we plan in that wider social infrastructure as well, maybe in a different way than established towns, because we need to make sure it's effective, it's sustainable, it's cost effective as well, and that all the public authorities can make that work going forward.
And how are you engaging with the residents and potential residents of both the existing Cranbrook as it develops and continues to develop, but also the proposed new towns?
Yeah, so there's two main ways. We're currently running a consultation around the Cranbrook Town Centre, and that's seen a really positive response rate. I think last time I checked, over 1,500 responses. And that is, I think, shows, the enthusiasm, if you like, for having a vibrant town centre that's going to have things like leisure proposals, food and drink and other things coming forward. So that's been really encouraging. And I would, and there's still events going on at the moment to try and, in the pub, I think I'll be in the pub in Cranbrook Town Centre on Thursday evening anyone wants to come and see me at 6 o'clock. but that's a way of, you know, face-to-face, online surveys. There's a variety of channels we use. More widely, in relation to forthcoming development proposals, the key vehicle for that, from our perspective, is the local plan. That's a district-wide exercise. Obviously, the biggest proposal in there, as you say, is the second new community. And we hold a series of events, consultations, again, face-to-face in village halls, for example, but also online surveys in order to try and provide as many channels as possible for people to feed into that consultation exercise.
So Cranbrook's one of your sort of kind of highlights. Can you give us a tour of some of the other areas that you're investing, you know, time, energy and money, I guess, ultimately, to develop across the East Devon region?
Yeah. And East Devon is a pretty diverse place, ultimately. And so in the what we call the west end of the district, or east of Exeter, depending on your point of view, we've got that real focus for very large-scale development, including the Cranbrook New Community, but also strategic employment sites situated very close to Exeter Airport. If you go down to Exmouth, the focus there is on placemaking and regeneration. How do you connect the town centre with the seafront, for example? There, you know, some really good ideas coming forward, how to kind of improve the public realm, for example, build on the tourist economy going forward. And then if you go across the coast, you've got individual proposals like the Drill Hall in Sidmouth coming forward for a restaurant use, for example, regeneration of the Prom area in Seaton, as well as, you know, bespoke and regeneration, dedicated regeneration projects in market towns like Axminster, that are all really key to how those towns perform in the future. How do you build on the role of those communities, those high streets? How do you help to tackle some of those issues around vacant retail units as well at the moment? So it's all a matter, I suppose, from my perspective, ensuring that the solutions that come forward are tackling the right problems with the right people, the right communities, and they will always be of a different scale given how diverse the district is across that wide patch.
And the Exeter and East Devon Enterprise Zone is very much part of the west end of your development plans?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the vast majority of new housing and this kind of strategic employment is very much in that kind of focused area, which, I guess is, 2 or 3% in land area terms of the districts as a whole. And so the enterprise zone designation is absolutely key for us. It allows us to look over a very long period. That designation lasts for 25 years. We're 6 or 7 years into that. And that gives us, it's a really powerful financial tool as well to be able to invest in things like infrastructure, low carbon infrastructure, how we get to net zero being a key theme there as well. So that designation is absolutely critical from my perspective.
That's great, Andy. And that segues nicely into our next guest, Naomi Harnett, who's the Programme Manager for Exeter and East Devon Enterprise Zone. Naomi, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a bit more about your role and introduce yourself and explain a bit about what your objectives are within the organisation?
I'm Naomi Harnett. I'm the Programme Manager for the Exeter and East Devon Enterprise Zone. And so I manage the 4 complementary sites, which are Sky Park, Exeter Science Park, Power Park and Cranbrook Town Centre. They're strategically located on the edge of Exeter with really great transport links on the doorstep to the Cliss Valley Regional Park, offering a fantastic quality of life, an area which really has something for everyone, from startups to growing businesses. And my role is to promote those sites and support the delivery of new infrastructure, which supports the continued delivery of those 4 complementary sites.
And also just thinking broadly about the, you know, the Building Greater Exeter initiative, how does that help with what you're trying to achieve as an organisation?
Okay, so the initiative supports us in many ways. We've all seen the challenge of the lack of those working in construction, slowing delivery of our sites due to lack of available labour. But also, I think it's really exciting that it's providing opportunities for young people to consider construction jobs. They're not all on-site labouring jobs. There's something really for everyone within construction. So it's really positive that that's being highlighted to young people and also those considering retraining into new careers.
Yeah. And the Exeter and East Devon Enterprise Zone, you described the 4 elements that make it up, but how long has that been in operation? And You know, what were the kind of sort of founding sort of principles of it as an organisation moving forward?
Okay, so we recently celebrated 6 years of the Enterprise Zone. It's always been a world-class low-carbon environment for businesses to thrive from its inception to where we are at the moment. We focus on enabling clean growth. We have BREEAM Excellent Buildings on the Science Park and Sky Park, working on high quality design and bringing in things like district heating to the zone. We also have Cranbrook Town Centre within the Enterprise Zone. We believe we're the only Enterprise Zone with a town centre, which is really exciting as it provides us so many opportunities for creating that whole range of employment opportunities and those facilities close to where people live.
I think that sounds really interesting, because often when you see kind of developments for businesses, there's not much kind of typical town centre infrastructure adjacent to it. So how is that town centre going to meet the needs of both residents and businesses in the next years?
So the first shops, the start of our town square and the supermarket are currently under construction and should be finished in spring 2024, so coming very, very soon. But there's so much more to come. The East Devon District Council, with the support of the Enterprise Zone, recently bought land within the town centre near the supermarket. And we are going to be receiving further land within the town centre from the developers very shortly. We should see Devon County delivering facilities like a youth centre, a children's centre and a library. We're looking at things like a leisure centre, but we're going to have to work hard to ensure there's sufficient funding for that facility to be provided. All of these facilities are going to form part of a town centre master plan, which we have just been out to consultation on. This needs to be finalised, working through the process to make sure we provide what people want in a timely way, but also regularly reviewing that approach, because we know that we've seen so much change within the high street in the last few years. We need to make sure that we continue to meet the needs of local residents.
You mentioned the funding there. I'm guessing the time frame for that is dependent on some issues that maybe you don't have immediate control over, not least kind of changes in societal sort of conditions that come and surprise us. But what's next in that process then? Have you got the next few years sort of worked out, or what's the next steps for you?
So the next steps is creating that town centre master plan. We're just out to consultation at the moment on the town centre. We received an amazing amount of responses. Obviously, local residents and businesses are really passionate about what happens within the town centre. And we're going to be working with that approach to work out how best to move forward. So we haven't got a preset plan for the town centre. That's going to very much come from the results from the consultation, working out what are the best next steps. But again, keeping that relevant to residents' needs and business needs as we move forward, because the only certainty is continued change.
Tell us a bit more about the other three sites that you're looking after. There's the Power Park, the Sky Park and the Science Park.
So our Power Park site is our smallest site. It provides space for startups and growing businesses. Really excitingly, it's located just opposite the Exeter College's Future Skills Centre and presents excellent opportunities for businesses to partner with the college to develop much needed skills and meet training needs. We've seen that Exeter Aerospace, located adjacent to the site, have recently worked with the college to address a shortfall in aircraft engineers through an apprenticeship programme. We then have Sky Park, again an exciting site providing some much needed small light industrial units. They've recently won an Exeter Property Award for their commercial development in phase one, provided by Onyx Business. And we're working hard to simplify the planning so that site can continue moving from strength to strength. Finally, is Exeter Science Park, which is a really vibrant community of successful companies amongst some of the top innovators within the Southwest, working across science, technology, engineering and maths. it really is clean growth in action.
So we've got those three sites, plus Cranbrook as a sort of powerhouse of development, really, to the west of East Devon. And Exeter Science Parks, that brings us nicely to our final guest, Sally Basker, CEO of Exeter Science Park. Welcome to the Building Greater Exeter podcast. Thank you for joining us. Just like you to give us a brief summary of what you do and your role, and also, again, the question of the importance of the Building Greater Exeter initiative, and also, you know, the built environment. How important is that to your plans of development?
Hi, thank you for inviting me. So I'm Sally Basker, I'm the Chief Exec of Exeter Science Park. We help innovative science-based companies to deliver extraordinary growth in our region. We do this by helping them, hosting them in state-of-the-art buildings, mentoring them to grow, and connecting to the wider sort of innovation ecosystem where you need finance and lawyers and all of these other good things. We've developed very quickly. So over the past 6 years, we've grown from fewer than 200 people on the park to somewhere around 650 people on the park. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're close to 800 people in the start of the next financial year. If I look at all of that, that has required a sort of big construction project. And this need for innovative and net zero, highly sustainable construction underpins everything that we do. So it's vital. So at that development part of the spectrum, it's really important. But there are two other areas that are equally important to us. One is actually the fit out of the individual spaces that companies take. So some of them will need specialist fit out of sort of vanilla spaces in order to operate. That may be labs, it may be other type of activities. And then the last bit is the ongoing facilities maintenance activity, which is a highly digital environment. All of our buildings are, you know, wired up to sensors like it's going out of fashion. And so my facilities manager, James, he is there looking at how the buildings perform and optimising their performance over time. So all of this comes together, and that's the sort of scope of what we do. In addition to that, then we have looking after the infrastructure, where the bit that you is underground, the drainage and the utilities and all of these other parts of the site. So there is a big built environment piece, but that supports the community that's delivering high-value jobs, enhanced productivity and economic growth into our region.
This Exeter Science Park, it's in East Devon, but it's on the boundary of what you might call Exeter by the motorway. It's perfectly located for transport networks. And it's, I guess, known for supporting startup businesses, but also tech businesses. And you're talking about those bespoke facilities. It's not just a generic set of office spaces. It's spaces that can be customised for the different types of businesses that are coming in there?
Absolutely. So we have four shareholders: Exeter City, East Devon, Devon County and the University of Exeter. And their joint aim is to re-baseline the southwest economy. And that's what this has been set up to do. Where we are located, as you say, is an ideal situation to access transportation, whether it's road or rail, or indeed air, to some extent. And so that is key. If I look at the sort of companies that are with us, we have sort of four or five main sectors: health and life sciences, we have security and defence, software as a service, advanced manufacturing, and so on. Each of those may have, some of them may need a sort of straightforward office, but with very good access to the internet. So we have a resilient 10 gigabit capability on site. Others may need the facility to put in laboratories, ranging from testing materials, building new bits of equipment, to perhaps designing new drug tests or sort of pathology analysis. So those are the sort of capabilities. So we design really flexible buildings that we can bring all of these different types of activity into.
You're talking about the actual design of the buildings. I know you're moving towards net zero. Can you talk a bit more about some of the technology involved, specifically with that within the sustainable buildings that you're creating?
Yeah, so at one stage, so what does net zero mean is one of the big questions. And what we have done is to settle at this point in terms of net zero for operational energy. So that is most easily described through that EPC energy performance certificate that you see on all buildings that's set by the government. And if you're looking at for your residential home, it goes A to G. If you're looking at commercial, there's an A+. And when you achieve A+, that's effectively net zero. And so two of our buildings, George Parker Bidder and Ada Lovelace, are already net zero, so have an A+. And some of that has been down to some very simple trade-offs in terms of how we build the buildings, using more solar panels, using highly insulated buildings, but not so insulated that we can't move walls and take things up and put things down and all the rest of these alterations that we will make over time. So they're all, you know, we've just upgraded our Science Park Centre, which was an EPC of B. We've put in retrofitted LED lighting and put another 30 kilowatts of solar PV on the roof. That will bring it to an EPC of A. And that is the worst performing building that we own. And that's a really good position to be in. The next stage will be something like the hotel that's coming onto site, which is going to be the first net zero carbon hotel. And they're having to work really hard to achieve that. But I think it's going to be groundbreaking, both regionally, nationally, and potentially internationally.
So you're setting a kind of benchmark for future development that is really focused on sustainability and the longevity of the project, and also future-proofing it so that you can adapt as things change.
Absolutely. You know, we have to work on the basis of continuous improvement. We are we have a responsibility to those who are going to live in the future, those people who are very young now or not yet born. We can't just play around with what we do. We have to strive to be the best that we can. That means that we have to take sometimes difficult decisions as to where to make trade-offs. But it also means that we have to think about carefully about what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
We've just done our assessed our carbon footprint for the first time working with the university. So the scope one emissions from the building, the sources that we own and controlled, are zero. Our scope two emissions from the energy used by our buildings are significantly less than the industry average, and we have a plan to decarbonise based around the work that's being done on the district heating and the waste to heat system. And 97% of our scope three emissions, which are low, are from our supply chain. So how do we work with our supply chain? So all of this is the first step in a plan for continuous improvement.
You've got a reputation as well for nurturing clean growth with the companies that are taking space within the Science Park. Can you give me a few examples of some of those initiatives?
Sure, yeah. So we've got companies like Remit Zero, which is developing a product to replace oil or gas-fired boilers, a clean solution. Quantera Systems, who monitor carbon at a landscape scale. Smarty, who've developed a waterless urinal, for example. Binet, improving refuse and recycling. Oxitec, with an environmental-friendly approach to purifying water. And Treeconomics, that's helping towns and cities build sustainable urban forests. But, you know, every company here at the park is working to improve what we're doing in this area. It's quite thought-provoking when you go around and see some of the efforts that people are making.
You're sort of making that sort of observation of people working towards a kind of common goal, in this case, towards more sustainable development. When we think about the three aspects of what you three do within East Devon, how do you and we were talking earlier off mic, weren't we, about how you work together as informal kind of teams and how this is all pulled together. Can you speak a bit more about those kind of relationships and how you sort of manage the overall goals that you're trying to achieve and make sure that developments aren't sort of contradicting the overall direction which you feel you need to be moving in?
Well, I suppose that, you know, we talked about us having multiple shareholders, Devon County and Exeter City, East Devon and the university. So at one level, all of the our strategic objectives at the Science Park are signed off by those four organisations. So that's the sort of bureaucracy part of it, as it were. Then you have to come in and think about the willingness to engage and support the growth of our region. And I think that's something that we all work together on. And it's entered into willingly. It's done formally and informally. There's very few weeks that will go past without us catching up, whether it's over a cake and coffee or through an email or something, to think about how do we take advantage of new opportunities to help push things forward. And that might be, how do we attract a new company in the region? How do we attract new finance to do something? How do we work together to publicise what we're doing? It's all about communication and it's all its forms, and it's that motivation to go ahead and work together. And that's not just between Exeter Science Park and East Devon, but it's with Exeter City and Devon County and the University of Exeter as well.
So there's a culture that sort of binds you together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just a general question open to all of you. What do you think are the challenges and also the opportunities for East Devon over the next few years? Perhaps we'll go to Naomi.
So I think regarding challenges, I think we're going to have the ongoing challenge of achieving all of that we've described within limited budgets. And that continues to be an ongoing issue for us all. But I think with the opportunities, I think in challenging times, it makes you think more creatively, more innovatively, and I think that's a real opportunity as we move forward, the opportunity to think in different ways, deliver in different ways within the resources that we have.
And Andy, what are your thoughts on that?
So I suppose I would give one specific example that perhaps kind of knits some of these aspects together. So as a council, we own our own council housing stock. We have over 4,000 council houses in the district, which provide a vital role, really, in terms of housing folk who might not otherwise be able to get onto the kind of housing ladder. Our challenge is, you know, to make sure we get all of that housing stock to net zero as well. And that is a huge challenge in terms of all the skills that are going to be required to do that, all the retrofit, you know, things like air source heat pumps that, you know, all demand a different set of skills than perhaps we're used to at the moment. The really good example for me that's come forward that kind of tracks across all this agenda from my perspective, there is a company, Remit Zero, at the Science Park, who are developing a new form of technology that potentially rivals air source heat pumps. It's a kind of, I can't quite describe it accurately, but it's a kind of pressurised thermal battery, if you can imagine that. And it is able to work from the grid or with PV on houses, photovoltaic cells, and provide an alternative to an air source heat pump as well. So we are now working with that company to trial how that works, to help them scale up that kind of innovation in 10 of our council housing stocks, council houses in Exmouth. And for me, that's a really good example of, you know, rising to the challenge across all our existing stock, how we work with the Science Park as a source of, you know, innovation, if you like, that helps to nurture these kind of businesses, and how we use our, if you like, purchasing power as a district council as well, to make sure we are not just moving towards net zero, but we're working to support local companies in order to help them as well, because it feels like a really great product. Air source heat pump's great, but maybe not relevant for everywhere. And the more we can do to help nurture that kind of ecosystem that Sally referred to, I think the better from our perspective. And for me, that's one perhaps small example currently, but a good example of how this agenda kind of hopefully knits together going forward.
And that's crossing into the more the residential sector as well. So it's not just about business here. It's about that kind of holistic approach to building communities and sustainable communities.
Absolutely. So, you know, things like, you know, societal level challenges, you know, like climate change. I like to think of Exeter as the best informed place on the planet, given the level of expertise that is available in the Met Office and the university, for example. And for me, that demands that we, you know, take it very seriously and we do more and more quickly, if that makes sense. So our ambition as a council is to be carbon neutral by 2040. That has a huge bearing. You know, 50% of our carbon emissions come from our council housing stock. So the more we can do to move forward at pace with that agenda, the better. And I think it does, you know, it's a really complex kind of systemic challenge, isn't it? And we need to work with a wide range of stakeholders to really get traction on that. So for me, that, you know, that's one example, as I say, but, you know, we, you know, if you look at the role of Building Greater Exeter, I know the college, for example, does a huge amount with Building Greater Exeter, with the Green Construction Advisory Panel, to think about what future skills are going to be needed. It's not going to necessarily be gas engineers, is it? So how do we transition from gas engineers to those who are really well-versed in terms of installing air source heat pumps? How do we start to build up the demand for that to make sure that, you know, companies have line of sight to that kind of supply chain? And these are, for me, some of the kind of really good challenges to get our teeth into. When we work collaboratively, we can start to, you know, nurture that kind of level of confidence, I think, for people. That's not just businesses, but that's people who are looking, you know, what future job opportunities are coming forward? How do I get the right skills, you know, to be able to, you know, perform those roles going forward? And I think that ecosystem's really good in the Exeter area, and Building Greater Exeter's performing a really great role from my perspective in that respect.
Thank you. Sally, back to you. Challenges and opportunities for East Devon.
So I'm going to start with the opportunities side, because
it's nice and positive.
I'm a glass half full person.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you build out the science park in the way that we want to do it, there should be jobs for around 3,500 people there by the mid to late 2030s. It will be an economic anchor for our region. Combined turnover perhaps of something around £300 million per annum. And that starts to become a new big lump of, that can attract more finance into our region. We should be home to some really great world and sort of advanced innovative companies by then. And that will also be really great for the region. It provides the jobs and it provides the expectation for young people across the region to think, yes, I can do that. I can have a role in these different sectors. So what are the challenges? The challenges are always about how do we find the finance, particularly at a time when, you know, public sector is going through a challenging financial position. But how do we fund that development? How do we help our companies grow? You don't create these fabled unicorns, $1 billion companies or whatever they are, without providing a lot of investment and the facilities that allow them to grow. So could we do that? Those are all the challenges. How do we provide that pathway for growth? And how do we then provide all the other things that people who want to work for these companies need? We've got great schools. We've got the housing being developed. We've got a fabulous environment for people to live and work in. Do we need to do more in arts and culture? Because surprisingly, scientists and engineers do go for that end of the spectrum as well. So all of that, it's about producing a great place to live that supports the growth of great companies. And more particularly, how do we look after all the people for whom this is traditionally home and value their input as well?
I think that's probably one of the most important things, isn't it? It's creating that place where people want to live and work, and a place where you can enjoy your lifestyle, both at home and whilst you're working. I'd like to thank you all for joining me. It's been fascinating to hear your perspectives on how things are developing and the relationship with the built environment to those goals, and also to see how you're working together, both formally and informally, to develop the region, which we all live and work in, and it's a great place to be. Since starting in 2018, Building Greater Exeter has delivered many positive outcomes in collaboration with partners, educational providers and other initiatives helping to shape the workforce now and in the future. And as we've heard today, With all the development across the region, the built environment industry is a crucial part of the growing success of the region. Building Greater Exeter's vision is to grow the number of partners and achievements driven by their ideas, interests and opportunities, which is crucial in ensuring the right problems can be solved and that the initiative can be sustained. There'll be links on the show notes to the Building Greater Exeter website, also links through to the Exeter Science Park website and also the Exeter and East Devon Enterprise Zone. Have a look on there, have a feel to what's available. There's some great resources, both for people looking to take part in the industry, to train or to switch career. And if you want to come to Exeter, there's some great locations to site your business. So definitely think about it. It's a lovely part of the world. And with the people that we've interviewed today, there's a whole sort of group dedicated to the future development of the region. And it's a very exciting time for the built environment here in East Devon and the Greater Exeter area. Thanks for joining me. This is the first Building Greater Exeter podcast. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
The Building Greater Exeter podcast is a Radio X production. The edition is sponsored by Building Greater Exeter, making the built environment a great place to work across Exeter, East Devon and Teignbridge.